strike, double, turkey, gutter ball. This week, we came very close to a strike, and then the strike struck out.
Plus, we'll update you on the Ice District parking lots and council paychecks.
Hi, I'm Troy.
I'm Mac.
And we're
Speaking Municipally.
Welcome back to Speaking Municipally. We are a podcast on this here gloomy media landscape. Mac, I don't know if you saw that article in the New York Times this week.
Yeah, I did. I thought this was pretty interesting. They had an article titled Sprouts of Hope in a Gloomy Media Landscape. I mean, the gloomy media landscape part is not surprising. Sprouts of Hope, I recently took issue with because some other journalists who have a lot more experience than I do referred to Taproot as a green sprout. And while that might be a compliment, I figured, you know, we're a little bit beyond the sprout stage. And so I posted about that on LinkedIn and hopefully got a little bit of education out into the world. But back to the New York Times article, the thing that stood out to me about this is, you know, they were talking about these for-profit independent news publications, and they have this new formula for startups. They say it's sustainable growth built on a mix of revenue sources, including ads, paid subscriptions, and sponsored events. Instead of trying to reach everybody on the internet, they have kept more narrow lanes of coverage. And I just thought, that sounds a lot like what we're trying to do at Taproot and what might be a good fit for local news, right? Is that you're not trying to reach everybody. You can't compete with the world. You can't compete with the New York Times. Stay in your lane. Do a really good job. Have a mix of revenue sources so you're not dependent on just one thing. And, you know, we've been talking more about that, Karen and I, my Taproot co-founder, about the things that Taproot's doing. So it was just a nice little bit of validation from the preeminent New York Times for an approach that we're taking to try to tackle what's happening in local news.
As you were talking there and you commented on posting on LinkedIn, as you are listening to this, dear listener, it will be my birthday. I will be turning the big 3-0, and nothing so aptly highlighted the age gap between us two as you posting on LinkedIn.
Well, happy birthday. But no, everybody's on LinkedIn now because Twitter or X imploded and you can't post news on Facebook or Instagram. Like LinkedIn is, I'm telling you, it's not just for old people, Troy. It's not TikTok, but it's certainly better than some of those other places.
And let me tell you, as someone that has posted a video on TikTok this week, Mac, I'm all in with the new kids now, right? I'm hip with the riz, as they say on the street.
I don't know what that means, but
neither do I. And Zoomers are cringing. As of recording, people in CSU 52 are not cringing. There is a tentative deal on the table to avoid a strike. CSU 52 has officially canceled the strike plans.
Or at least they've put it on hold for the moment. So they've got this tentative agreement. It's got to be ratified by the membership. Originally, early this morning on Thursday, they delayed the start of the strike by a day. So from Thursday at 11 a.m. to Friday at 11 a.m. It seems like there's a deal here. It's been quite a week, Troy, preparing for this. All the news and the news releases from the city talking about these services that are going to be impacted. Conversations on the street and around the coffee shops and stuff about like, how are you going to be impacted by the strike? For me personally, it's like, well, we take our kids to the library a lot. That would really suck if the libraries are closed. And now we get to, you know, the end of the week and maybe cooler heads have prevailed. I don't know. What's your take on why they all of a sudden got a deal?
There's a lot of reasons that it could be, and you and I will never know. Neither of us were in the room where it happened, as much as we may wish to be.
You might have been. Maybe they were talking about your video in the room.
I don't want to take credit for solving this strike, but you know, it's been a long time since Alberta has had a really real strike.
The last one for CSU is 1976, according to CBC.
Yeah, so it's been a long time, and strikes are hard, right? We saw with the SAG and writer strike down in the States that, you know, there were these huge funds where big whales like prominent A-list actors were donating millions of dollars to strike funds to keep everything running. But like the reality of a strike is that you're not paid. You're not working. You're not getting paid. The union may provide a stipend, maybe about $400 per week to be full time on the picket lines. And that's full time 40 hours a week. A lot of CSU still only worked 33 hours a week. So they may be actually working more hours for less pay on strike.
Right.
And, you know, couple that with there's going to be tensions. There's going to be a lot of acrimony. There's going to be some people who, you know, disagree with the strike with their colleagues. And then there's more tensions there. Like the actual realities of strike is hard. So there's a possibility that, you know, as the strike approached, maybe people within the union got a a little bit of cold feet, right? It's very easy to vote yes for a strike. It's much harder to actually strike. So that might have been a component at play.
We don't know the terms of the deal, though, we should say. This tentative deal, the city said they're not going to comment on that while the ratification is pending. So it doesn't seem, however, like members got cold feet and said, oh, fine, we'll take the deal, right? Yes. It seems like there's some sort of a change here.
You know, I'm not certain because I wasn't in the room, but I will eat several hats if the final and best offer that the city offered was what was accepted by CSU 52.
Yeah.
I think the main thing that really caused this to happen, Mac, was the gross incompetence of basically everyone involved. There's a lot to smear all around. If you had seen my TikTok or Twitter video that I posted.
Or on Reddit.
We're on Reddit.
The rest of that's the common ground, I feel like, between TikTok and LinkedIn.
Yes. It's Reddit. You know, there was a city council statement that they put out, which was boneheaded. And we'll get to that in a second. But on the other side, too, the union wasn't arguing with flying colors, right? You know, CSU 52 has a lot of great workers, a lot of great people, and a lot of services that we all support. You mentioned the library, but also rec centers, even funeral services like
911.
Yeah. These are all things that are very important, and a lot of Edmontonians really like those services and the people who work for them. But it appeared to be the official position of CSU 52, as represented by Lanny Chudik, CSU 52 president, speaking on behalf of the union, that City Council was supposed to cancel Blatchford to pay for union raises. It is galling to me the level of amateurism with which CSU 52 comms, headed by Lanny Chudik, managed to represent themselves. And if I was a union member, I'd be thinking strongly about a stark change in union leadership. Because if council was not as incompetent as they were in this negotiating process, and we'll get to that in a second, this could have gone very poorly for the union because they were not negotiating from a strong position in terms of moral high ground and quality of argument.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned council and their incompetence on this because it isn't really council directly, at least, that's involved in the negotiations, right? So the union president, Lanny Chudik, met with Amarjeet Sohi, the mayor, on Tuesday and said no progress had been made. And I imagine that was sort of a last-ditch effort to try to get something going because really their job is to negotiate with administration. And administration is meant to come up with the best deal for the city on behalf of their boss, who's city council. So it's pretty interesting to me that council put out that statement, as you mentioned earlier in the week, and that they all signed it. They all signed it.
So underpinning all of this is the Andre Korbald of it all. You and I have talked about Andre Korbald, the city manager, not being exceptional in his role as city manager and, you know, falling somewhat to the ire of council.
Or at least not meeting some of the lofty expectations we might have had for our next city manager.
And I think a lot of people were feeling that early last week. Negotiations were stalled, a strike was looming, and council was silent.
Yeah.
It was feeling like Andre Korbald was really dropping the ball, and people were publicly commenting that Andre Korbald was dropping the ball. And they were pushing councillors to take control, step up, and speak out.
Yeah.
And one councillor did.
Right.
Councillor Tim Cartmell put out a statement basically saying that the negotiating team had been not operating as effectively. It was time for council to take a, quote, leadership role and, you know, step up and really avoid a strike. A mere, like, 16 hours later, though, he had signed the letter that all 12 members of council plus the mayor had signed, basically saying the direct opposite, that the negotiating team was doing great, that the offer put forward by administration was fair and equitable for both the union and the broader citizens of Edmonton, and that it was a great deal and they stand behind the negotiating team and are ready to bargain. And that, you know, was a stark switch. And I have to think what happened here was all of council was getting a little bit jumpy. They were waiting for which person on council was going to jump and speak up first because none of them wanted to bargain in bad faith.
Yeah.
There are laws preventing that. But when Tim Cartmell made that statement, they all said, we all need to step in at this point. We are not letting this guy have the last word and have it be in that way. And I'm assuming it was probably the mayor because Amarjeet Sohi is a consensus builder. He's a calm voice of reason usually. He probably got them all into a room and said, guys, whoa, chill. Here's a statement. Let's all get behind it. This statement upsets us all. This statement is not great, but let's all put our names on it and no one else say anything. And I think perhaps ascribing motives, many councillors weren't happy with the statement, but they all put their names on it.
Yeah, I think it's one of those situations where you're potentially in a lot of legal gray area if you don't unanimously sign this statement, right? As you're saying, like, they have the one employee. If one or two of them don't publicly support the employee in this situation, it's probably not a good look for council. And they're trying to navigate, as you're saying, this sort of murky area between, do we take a leadership role or do we not? But, you know, Cartmel didn't have to sign it. As you said, he had already put out a statement the day before. It's kind of interesting that, you know, his name is still on there. I also just side note on Cartmel's statement. I just cannot read it without thinking about Trump. Because, and I don't mean to suggest that Tim Cartmel is as crazy or dumb as Trump, because he's obviously not. But just his use of the word frankly and the way he ended it, there's a deal to be had here. Let's get it done. Like, the language is very populist, you know, very different than the council statement, which is looks like it was written more by a lawyer.
And so this is what confuses me about the council statement, because council didn't write this.
Yeah,
they didn't get in a room and just say, I'm going to jot down a few words in my notes app and publish it to the mayor's Twitter. That's not how this gets done, especially in union negotiations. Some lawyers, several lawyers, vetted this every single word. And that is why I was so confused with how close it is to lies, right? There aren't lies there. I think there is a truth in all of the statements, but to say it was designed to inform, I think is a stretch. I read it as designed to mislead. That's a strong allegation, given that doing such a thing would violate council's code of conduct. All council communications must not mislead the public, which is why a statement signed by every member of council and clearly vetted by lawyers, giving me the heebie-jeebies about being misled and misinformation, really took me aback this week.
So there's a few things that you pointed out in your video about this statement that are charitably are misleading, right? So let's take those in order. First one, 7.25% in total wages over 5 years.
It's true. That is a true offer that council has offered. It's a bit misleading insofar as it doesn't include the 2 years of zeros that the union has took. And if you go back to the discussion around that bargaining, the union was taking those zeros because it was a very tough budgetary time in the middle of COVID. It's like, you take your lumps now, and when we recover, you know, you'll get yours. But we've recovered. You look at the GDP of Alberta, you look at, you know, the global recovery, we've recovered from COVID. And yet they're not getting theirs. So that is not misleading, but it's an omission that isn't necessarily fair to the other side.
The other thing I've seen online, several people posting in response even to your video about the change in working hours for some of the union members and how the 7.25%, when you take into account that they'd be working more hours than they would have been before, is even smaller than that percentage.
For sure. Again, not a lie, not the whole truth, not the whole communication. It's definitely one-sided. And, you know, council doesn't have an obligation to argue against itself, but council itself does have an obligation, I think, to inform the public.
Yeah.
And I don't think this line quite does that. The second thing, and this is where it really veers into the misleading territory, is it says about 8,000 city employees have already accepted a similar increase for 2021, 2022, and 2023. The offer on the table for CSU 52 is 7.25% over 5 years.
Yeah.
It's not possible for a similar increase to be over 3 years, right? This is an apple to oranges comparison.
Yeah. So that's another one.
And in fact, the police, you know, they did get 7%
right
over 3 years. So it's a much, much larger increase.
We don't have to go very far to find the next one. The proposal put forward by CSU 52, which I don't think has been shared publicly. We just know the city's final and best offer.
I have seen at some point a union proposal. I don't know if it's the most recent proposal.
Yeah.
For a ballpark, consider about 12% over 5 years as the union proposal.
Okay. So the council statement says, if that were applied to all of the city workforce, that would be an additional tax increase of 2.5% for this year alone, or $47.5 million.
And so the problem with this is it's not saying for CSU 52. It's saying if we took the raise that CSU 52 has asked for and applied it to every worker at the city, including those 8,000 who have already accepted a different deal, it would cost us $47 million.
Right.
The thing that's not being said here is, if we gave it to CSU 52, if we gave CSU 52 what they were asking for, it cost us $11 million, about. And that equates to about a 0.6% tax increase. You know, for context, a couple of weeks ago, we gave Explore Edmonton $6 million because they forgot that they had to pay taxes. $11 million doesn't seem like such a stark amount.
Yeah.
And, you know, if the statement had said this, we are threatening to discontinue 911 services and libraries and rec centers and funeral services because of $11 million, I think the entire population would be laughing in council's face. They'd be like, grow up, guys. Come on. What is this? And now, of course, from the city's perspective, unions do have things like Me Too agreements where, you know, if one union gets something, they can also get this bonus. And this should also set a benchmark. So, you know, further negotiations and upcoming ones, for example, firefighters will probably go to arbitration soon. You know, this will set benchmarks that will increase city costs. That is a perfectly real risk. But to say that all city employees would get it for 2024 in this budget year is a lie. That's not how finances work. And you know that's not how finances work because the next line in the statement says there would be a one-time $17 million unfunded retroactive payment. So if it was the case that the city planned for related benchmarked increases in the year that they happened, then there wouldn't be an unfunded retroactive payment. So one of these two lines has to be a lie. And this is where I'm extremely uncomfortable. And I don't know how it got past the lawyers.
Yeah, like why would they agree to that if you can plainly see that those two things are in opposition? Councillor Carmel was asked on Twitter about this, about his about face from his personal statement just the day before. And he maybe unsurprisingly blamed it on union leadership and said that there's been inconsistent private communication with union leadership. He said, quote, "I think it is important to know what the full impact of their offer would be on city budgets and taxes," end quote.
What that statement indicates to me is Councillor Cartmell went all gunslinger on his own and said, oh, ho, ho, I'm going to own the mayor and really start my campaign by making the statement and being the first one out of the gate. And then three city lawyers got him into a room and said, look, here's what you just did. And he's like, oh, whoops, better sign a statement.
Well, there's one silver lining in coming to an agreement at the final hour here, Troy, and that's that we won't have to spend more money on police overtime. Post Media reported that 911 operators would obviously be affected by the strike. There's 158 CSU 52 members that were working as civilian emergency communication staff handling 911 calls. About 94%, I guess, of the staff who answer those calls work for CSU 52. And were the strike to go ahead, the Edmonton Police Service and EPS officers would take over as 911 operators, which, of course, would mean we'd have to pay them overtime, probably. And so increased costs potentially there as well, not just in terms of opportunity costs and everything, but having to actually pay expensive police overtime.
And not to go back to buffoonery, Mac, but I want to do another round on buffoonery because there's a third party here that I didn't mention who also made absolute fools of themselves this week. So, Mac, there was a letter from the AFL that got sent to City Council and then published to their website in a press release. So they were proud of this letter. This letter is absolute conspiracy theory nut job stuff. It's
and just to be clear, it's from eight unions, not just the Alberta Federation of Labor, right?
Correct. Yes, the AFL posted it, but it is undersigned by Gil McGowan of AFL, Jason Schilling of the ATA, Steve Bradshaw of ATU, Guy Smith of AOPE, Rory Gill of CUPE, Mike Parker of HSAA, Quinn Benders of NASA, and Heather Smith of UNA. So all the big unions are represented.
Yeah.
The content of the letter is basically a conspiracy theory.
There's a lot of our sources say in this letter.
Sure, yeah. So basically, the crux of it is they got a tip that the provincial government wants the strike to go forward because there's a public safety element. As you mentioned, you know, some CSU 52 workers work for 911 operating. So there's a public safety perspective there. And they allege that their sources tell them that the province would then litigate the province would then legislate all CSU 52 back to work for public safety reasons, and they would send it to a public emergency tribunal, and it would be a bad deal for everyone involved. And the province wants the strike because of it. They want the city to walk into this trap so they can do this big coup de grace against unions and really kneecap unions going forward. It's all very like conspiracy theory stuff. I could see a reality where Daniel Smith actually does something like this. That's possible. But Daniel Smith is generally not capable of, in a single press conference, keeping the lies she just told straight. A vast conspiracy, I think, is a little bit much to ascribe to the UCP government. And the takeaway from this letter is in order to avoid this vast conspiracy, you must give the union everything they want and immediately end bargaining so that the province doesn't step in and ruin everything. Thankfully, the undersigned, all the unions in Alberta.
I had a slightly different take on this. I don't know that it's saying as much about UCP as you're indicating there. To me, the crux of this letter is this one paragraph about four in. Quote, "Have you ever wondered why your management side bargaining team led by city manager Andre Korbold has failed to secure a deal in 18 months? We submit that there is no agreement because Korbold didn't want one. Instead, we think he wanted to reach an impasse and a strike, which would then provide his friends in the UCP government with the pretext that they need to swoop in, order the strikers back to work, and use a pet public emergency tribunal to impose a settlement," end quote. It's more about Korbold, I think, is how I read this, than maybe it is about the UCP.
There is another line later on in the letter where it said, you don't have to commit to cleaning up the mess created by your city manager. He may be a UCP co-conspirator, but you don't have to be one as well. So you're right that there is some level of, you know, discrediting Andre here. And this was a line that I wanted to pursue. So I started asking around and talking to people because there's a school of thought that the city wants a strike here, right?
Yeah.
If you're in a tough financial situation and the city of Edmonton decides to close libraries, that's bad. The public doesn't like that. But if the libraries are closed, you save money, right?
Yeah.
If you can blame it on the unions, then Bob's your uncle. There was a report that I've seen that in 2022, there was almost $70 million of savings from within CSU 52 due to work stoppages and things related to COVID-19, right? So, you know, there's a case to be made that a strike could save money. So I put that to quite a few people, both on council and within city administration, and almost 100% of people told me unequivocally no. It may sound like that on paper, but like the morale cost, a strike is felt for decades within the organization. And if you're offside of your employees, for the next 10 years, you're not getting the best work out of those employees. So the long-term cost of something like this is absolutely astronomically higher than the pennies you'd save by closing a library for a couple of weeks. At least for me, that did sort of assuage my fear that no, there's probably no conspiracy, because Andre Korbold probably knows that if he doesn't deliver well on OP-12, like that might be the final straw for a lot of the conservative councillors who may be his saving grace in the behind the scenes votes. So if he does something that will actively and knowingly cause a lot of financial hardship to the city of Edmonton, I don't know if that's in his personal financial interests. I'm not convinced that that was a line of thinking that anyone at the city or at council was pursuing. And given all of that, I'm not convinced by anything in this AFL letter. And worse, Mac, is, you know, when you have campaigns with the Jason Kennys and the Mike Nichols, and they say things like, you know, the NDP and their union friends who want to do XYZ. You know, it's a slur and it's a smear. But Mac, I find it really hard looking at how CSU 52 leadership has behaved this week and how all the prominent leadership of unions have behaved in this letter. And I find it hard to give them any charity or credit. This is kind of a black smear. And if I saw from Take Back Alberta, or if I saw from any of the other far right-wing organizations, or even something like Rebel News, a unhinged letter like this, smearing public officials and demanding because of a conspiracy that a government capitulate to their demands, I'd be calling it what it is, which is anti-democratic, intensely problematic, and something that the government should ignore. And I don't think we should give the unions a pass for it. And I think the fact that all unions appear to be behind this kind of messaging, that's going to be extremely problematic going forward.
Yeah, I think that's really concerning about, you know, potentially, you know, future strikes. I know the AUP, for example, have a negotiation coming up this year, later this year, that's going to be a pretty big one in the province. I think it's generally a better practice to assume that people have the best of intentions and let them prove you wrong rather than assume the worst and force them to prove you right. You know, so even in the case of Andre Korbold, maybe there's a little bit of a shift in power happening in this whole situation between council and their primary employee in the city manager. But I don't know that there's any evidence to suggest he wants the strike to go forward. He's a manager of a big team of people. He understands a lot of the things you just outlined about the impact of, you know, what that could mean for morale and all the other things that would come from this. So definitely conspiracy theory level stuff, on this letter.
So the takeaway from all of this is, despite the best efforts of everyone involved to really not get a deal, that's my take of the situation, we probably have a deal. Like you said, it's tentative. We don't have the details. Details should be disseminated to the union later today on Thursday. It may be out by Friday, but the actual ratification process will go to union membership next week, along with information sessions. So within the next week or so, we should have details about what this offer contained.
And in the meantime, CSU 52 employees are still working, so all services remain up and running and operational for Edmontonians.
Yes. And a final note on the library, which isn't quite resolved. Library is a different bargaining unit. There's about 700 library employees. I have heard from people within CSU 52 that it's not a financial problem, that the finances and the raises for the library unit, that's all hunky-dory, but it's some organizational stuff because the library has specific facilities and that operational stuff still has to be ironed out. But all signs are pointing towards it's just, you know, a matter of ironing it out. The big breaking point in this whole bargaining process was wages, and wages have been sorted to the tentative acceptance of all parties. Speaking of wages, though, convenient timing. Lauren Boothby at the Edmonton Journal was writing just last week about council's compensation increasing 2.4% in 2024. And indeed, that Mayor Amarjeet Sohi makes more than Alberta's premier.
Yeah, actually, this story came out this week from Lauren. So, you know, epic timing to have a headline that says Edmonton City Council gets automatic 2.4% raise in 2024. And then, as you say, the mayor making more than the premier. So this is, of course, not a new thing. It's kind of strange that this article is published on March 11th or March 12th, given that we're 3 months now into the year. Council's compensation is not determined by council. It's predetermined. There's a regulatory mechanism. They have a policy about this. It was last reviewed in 2020. But Postmedia still felt it was appropriate to go and ask the mayor about the salary, given the city's financial challenges. He, of course, said what he should say, which is that we don't set our own pay. There's an independent body that comes up with this. And so whether you think it's good or not, it's not like they are holding the union to the fire here for a wage increase and giving themselves a big increase.
Of course, it's not a great look to offer a union, you know, 0 and 1.5% over a couple of years while taking 2.4 yourself. But I think this is part of the other reason why throughout this process, the CSU 52 bargaining didn't go to arbitration, right? Because if this went to binding arbitration, I think someone performing that arbitration would say, well, you know, look at council's compensation, look at these other unions' compensation, look at the police.
Right.
And they'd gift a pretty high increase to CSU 52. And of course, you know, these salaries need to attract people to make very frank, difficult, and important decisions and make them now. Like the ice district. No, they didn't make that decision now in the ice district parking lot, did they?
Nope, they kicked that can down the road.
Cut their salary.
This was supposed to be discussed on March 11th at the public hearing, so on Monday this week. Council voted unanimously to postpone it to at least April 2nd to allow for further comprehensive discussions on downtown surface parking lots to occur. So we did get some information because this item came to public hearing about the various positions of administration and the proponent here. And some of that is sort of interesting to me, Troy, but no actual discussion or decision this week. We've got to wait a month or so for that.
Normally when council kicks the can down the road, it's bad news bears for us. We're disappointed in council. In this case, it's actually best case scenario for us because kicking it down the road means they're not voting yes to allow parking. And because the temporary usage expired in December of 2023, Case Group isn't actually allowed to use this area as a gravel parking lot.
And yet they are, you know.
Yes, that's fair. You know, something like 80 or 90% of the downtown parking lots are already illegal, so they're in good company.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an unusual thing for downtown parking lots. I think it is a bit strange that this expired in December, and I understand from looking at the presentations that they were hoping this discussion would have happened sooner than it has. So what's another month for a delay, I suppose? But administration has been working with the applicant to find ways to improve this. So their big issue, if you read administration's report, seems to be the appearance, safety, and functionality of the lots. Current zoning bylaw requirements are it must be hard surfaced, it must have landscape islands, must have pathways for people through the lots, and must have landscaping around the perimeter. And the current parking lots in the Ice District have none of those things. So administration says they meet all the requirements of the zoning bylaw except for these very important things. And they sort of argue that, well, it's unnecessarily wasteful and expensive for temporary surface parking lots to be hard surfaced, to be paved, when they're going to be ripped up and taken out for redevelopment. I think that argument would hold a lot of weight if we were in 2018 and we were talking about a couple of years of gravel parking lots. But if they get their extension, it will have been a full, what, 12 years, Troy, that those things have been parking lots since it was first approved. I feel like we could have paved it in that time. Administration's big solution to all of this is that we'll get 13 more trees and 100 more shrubs being added to improve the public realm around these parking lots. But other than that, they're quite happy to approve that they continue as gravel parking lots until 2028.
And of course, shout out to the Downtown Business Association, who submitted in favor of this usage as a parking lot, saying that accessible parking can draw visitors for businesses and events downtown, and the nearby casino relies heavily on these lots. Therefore, the extension is appropriate. Guys, come on. Come on.
You might cut this, Troy, but I'll just pop this in here. You can decide in the edit bay whether it's worth keeping in.
Yeah, thanks. I decided, and it wasn't. Here's the rapid fire segment. Commonwealth Recreation Center is the newest facility in Edmonton to complete its solar installation. The 1,128-panel array, which is estimated to produce over 700 megawatt hours of energy in its first year of operation, powered on this month. While the new installation aligns with Edmonton's clean energy goals, in the province of Alberta, solar projects now have to pay reclamation bonds for cleanup. Thankfully, owing to its location above a public pool, the city just put a couple hours of a teen lifeguard's salary in trust to pay for tidying up the solar panels after he fishes a number two out of the pool.
Edmonton Police, in partnership with the province's Houselessness Reception Center, are highlighting some of the innovative ways the Edmonton housing market is providing for citizens in our city. This week, they highlighted a unique 5x5 shelter opportunity in a cave dug out near the funicular. The facility boasts incredible views, low rents, and an all-steel entry system. This and many other incredible housing opportunities are available for anyone in Edmonton willing to throw everything they own in the trash and wait 6 to 20 months for the referral to vest.
This week, Rocky the Ram, the official Alberta legislator mascot, was unveiled in the House to applause from members on both sides of the aisle. However, not to be outdone by their senior order of government, Edmonton City Council also unveiled their mascot, Timmy the Tin Can. Unfortunately, the unveiling ceremony for council's mascot was a bloodbath. All council members present reverted to their most primal Edmonton City Council instincts. They see a can, they kick it.
Is the Rocky the Ram thing true?
Like, yes, Rocky the Ram is actually the legislature's mascot.
Why is it a ram?
Well, the Speaker of the House introduced it because we typically butt heads in the legislature. So honestly, like, I kind of laughed. I mean, okay. it was a little good.
Okay, I can get behind that potentially. All right.
Speaking Municipally is a publication of Taproot Edmonton, and so too is the Taproot Edmonton calendar. We want to tell you once again about this wonderful calendar that lets you know about everything happening today, this weekend, or later in the city of Edmonton.
Couple things stood out to me, Troy, that are coming up. I'm going to go with a bit of a food theme for the ones that I'm going to call out this week. It is, of course, coming up on March 20th, the return of Edmonton Downtown Dining Week. 55 restaurants participating. There's usually some good deals to be had. Not all of them, I'd recommend, but some of them are pretty good. So that's coming up. And another one that is interesting, is a really long-running event in our city, is Edmonton Seedy Sunday. This year takes place on March 24th, once again at the Alberta Avenue Community Center, which is a good sign that gardens are going to be growing again soon.
One of the events I want to highlight is because this is an event that I would never highlight in a million years, and also one that I won't go to. But March 14th through 17th at the Edmonton Expo Center, or you might know it better as the Northlands Agricom. I mentioned that old name because it's the Edmonton Boat and Sportsman's Show. This is sure to be a typical Burton event. There's going to be outdoors. There's going to be boating. There's going to be sporting. There's probably guns and hunting. I'm not going to go, Mac, but I do like to remember sometimes that we do live in a city where an event like this can fill an entire expo center, and it will. While they're hunting for, you know, ducks or geese or moose or whatever it is you hunt for, I'm sure CSU 52 will be hunting for a good deal in their negotiation. So all the best to you at the negotiating table. I'm sure we will have an update next week with exactly what they decided. Knock on wood, unless, of course, they all still decide to strike. We'll tell you all that and more next week. Until then, I'm Troy.
I'm Mac.
And we're
Speaking Municipally.